no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning via our YouTube channel, Illegal Curve Radio is how you can find us on YouTube, or just search for Illegal Curve Hockey on YouTube. We say good morning to the Winnipeg Jets and NHL universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We've got comprehensive Winnipeg Jets coverage, analysis, and discussion, looking back at last night's Jets victory over the Vancouver Canucks, previewing Sunday's return matchup against the Canucks, and of course next week's battles against the Montreal Canadiens. With Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuke, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we welcome you to the program on this Saturday morning. Nice to see so many of you joining us via the YouTube and anywhere that you may be tuning in to this program. Ezzy, good to see you. Dave, good to see you. I gotta start this. How much longer is this look going to go? You know, haircuts are open. You can get a haircut now. You can, you know, trim that beard a little bit. I mean, if you weren't in somebody's house right now and you were on the street, you would definitely be at the necessary disheveled level where I would give you a couple toonies or something.
Yeah, probably. And the problem with the haircuts is if you go to get a haircut, I can't speak for other provinces, but here in Manitoba, if you go to get a haircut, they won't trim your beard and mustache. So as you can see, that's a big part of the hair that's on my head right now. So yeah, I can go get a haircut, but I'm still going to have this big beard, which means I'm going to have to trim it at home, which I have been proven to not be able to do. So
you until can't I trim can, your own beard?
Well, I can physically trim it, but I'm not going to do a very good job of it and it's going to look uneven. So I'm going to wait until you can actually get your beard and mustache trimmed before I get a haircut. So that might not be until, you know, May or June.
Okay, well, at least that's not a problem that Dave Manuke has. A nice clean-shaven look there, Dave, nice and professional. Although, you know, of course, the etiquette about wearing a hat indoors is something we've discussed before, but we don't need to rehash that one again.
I'm not so sure it would ever work on me.
What's that, a beard?
I don't know. No hat indoors? I don't subscribe to that.
Nonsense. I know you don't subscribe to that. I know, you're very froom. It's all about, you know, wearing a head covering. I guess it's either a hat or it's a kippah, right?
Or a toque, I would guess, but sure.
That's true. A toque would also work in this instance as it works. Anyways, without further ado, let's get started talking about last night's Winnipeg Jets victory over the Vancouver Canucks. And it was a win, I'm going to say, that was unlike most other wins we've seen from the Jets this year. I mean, we're used to the Jets playing open fire wagon brand of hockey, you know, not that that's necessarily how Paul Maurice wants the team to play, but that's sort of been the modus operandi in the North Division so far. Last night was not that. It was a tight checking game. It was a game with very good goaltending on both sides, particularly by Laurent Brossoit, of course, and the Jets end up being able to shut down the Canucks and end up with the 2-0 victory, which is an all-important 2 points against the Canucks team that has been struggling and is below the Jets in the standings, and that's where the Jets obviously want to keep them.
Yeah, and you're right, Drew. I mean, especially, you know, when you go back to that first game in Edmonton when it was 6-5, I mean, we're just not used to having many 2-1 or 3-2 games, even though last weekend against Ottawa, it was a 2-1 game, and then, you know, you had one game against the Calgary Flames a couple of weeks ago that the Jets won 3-2. But for the most part, we're expecting, you know, at least 5 goals, if not, you know, 7 or 8 goals per game. So yeah, this game was definitely different than the 2 games against the Oilers. But, you know, when you look at, you know, especially the Oilers and, you know, they beat the Flames last night. I mean, the Jets needed this win. And now you're just trying to keep that separation between yourself and the other teams that are chasing you, right? We're not sure, you know, if the Jets are going to catch the Leafs. I mean, the Leafs definitely have that nice cushion right now, but you know, that was a big win. And, you know, Josh Morrissey talked about it before the game. Paul Maurice talked about it before the game. They said like, they didn't want to lose a second game in a row. And obviously, you know, you could argue that, you know, game on Wednesday night against the Oilers, the Jets were much better than the game on Monday, which they won. So I think that they carried a lot of the good things that they did in that game on Wednesday night in Edmonton over to the game on Friday. And, you know, watching that Canucks team, boys, I mean, you know, we have to give, you know, Laurent Brossoit credit right off the bat, you know, picks up a big shutout. But, you know, aside from that Lotto line of Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, and JT Miller, And don't get me wrong, that second line with you know, Bo Horvat, Tanner Pearson, and Nils Höglander, I really like that line. But you look at that Canucks team, and you know, they remind you a lot of, you know, the Flames and, you know, the Oilers, in that they have two really good scoring lines, but after that, you know, the offense, you know, dries up, you know, fairly quickly. And I realize, you know, a player like Brandon Sutter's had a good year, and you know, you've got some, you know, Jay Beagle's a good, you know, veteran guy on the fourth line, but you know, that Canucks defense, I think, is still a work in progress. But overall, give the Jets credit. I mean, the Jets did play what you would call a textbook road game. It wasn't perfect, but for the most part, I mean, really, at any point in that game, boys, did you think that the Canucks were going to come back and win that game? I didn't. I thought the Jets were in control, you know, most of the game. They probably could have had, you know, two or three more goals, even going back to that first period, that really good chance by Nikolaj Ehlers. So, you know, it was a very, you know, tidy victory is the word I would describe. And, you know, they needed that coming off of that really, you know, disheartening loss on Wednesday.
Well, you know, to your point there, Ezzy, I mean, Laurent Brossoit, there was a point probably in the first period, maybe it was early in the second, where you just saw how comfortable Laurent Brossoit looked in goal for the Jets last night, Dave. And you're wondering, you know, what was it going to take for the Canucks to get a puck past them? You know, and obviously that chance by Nate Schmidt where the puck trickled behind him and then Brossoit reached back and swiped it away from trouble. I mean, Brossoit just looked like he was so solid and comfortable in net. I mean, what is it now? 88 shots that he's faced in goal while playing in Vancouver, and he stopped all 88 of them. I think that was the stat that our buddy Mike McIntyre tweeted out. So, you know, he just looked very solid in net last night, Dave.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of confidence. And our friend Kevin Woodley from Kevin in Goal, that writes for NHL.com, he's a goalie expert. Whenever we have goalie questions, we talk to him. And he asked Paul Maurice about that after the game. And he said, what kind of confidence does it give your team having a player who has a similar style, has a similar coach, you know, has everything off-season training-wise as Connor Hellebuyck? And the two have such a close relationship. Does that provide your team with a little bit of, you know, comfort, you know? And we sometimes talk about that, right? Does the team have as much when they play in front of the backup as they do in front of the starter? And I, you know, look, Connor Hellebuyck, I mean, Laurent Brossoit, sorry, has been phenomenal pretty much from training camp. Like, everybody has been talking about how dialed in he's looked during his starts, and he's been excellent for the Winnipeg Jets, and they're going to need him, especially not now, but come March, when the season really condenses, when you're playing the Montreal and the Torontos, you're going to need him to be on the top of his game. And to me, he's looked phenomenal, and he's looked like the Laurent Brossoit we kind of expected him to be. So, you know, a key element, I thought he was simply sensational last night in the win. And it was funny hearing him. I think, I don't remember who asked him after the game about the Nate Schmidt save, Drew. And he said he almost was too fast on it, and he kind of overthought it, and he quickly made the save. And credit to Thatcher Demko. I thought he was excellent as well. I thought both goaltenders put on a clinic. I mean, there were two, as he's point, the Jets probably could have had two, three, four more goals. And I thought Demko was excellent. The Canucks just couldn't generate. And you can see you really getting a sense from a team that's frustrated in Vancouver. And, you know, the loss of Markstrom, the loss of Tanev, those seem to be really impacting this Vancouver Canucks team, because we're not seeing what we saw last year from them this year.
Well, to your point there, Dave. I mean, you were talking about the frustration in Vancouver, and I think it was post game. Elias Pettersson was talking about, you know, he's sort of sick and tired of listening to or having to say every post game that, you know, it's all about, you know, how close we were to getting. It's a matter of fact that they're not getting the puck in the net. Whereas not that the Jets got the puck in the net a lot last night. They got it just really the one goal before the Mason Appleton empty netter. But it's just, you know, in Vancouver, you can feel the frustration building, but the Jets took advantage of that. They took advantage of a team that is not playing with a lot of confidence, even though, you know, for a lot of that game, I thought Vancouver was as good, if not better, than the Jets. But when you have a team that sort of knows how to win, and right now, whatever you want to say about the Jets, whatever you want to say about some of their underlying numbers, so far this year, they're a team that knows how to win. And I mean, I don't think you can put too much emphasis on how important it is that they just haven't had losing streaks this year. Mm-hmm. Whenever they lose a game, they bounce back the next game with a victory. And when you're playing an only in division schedule, it's just so key and just so essential that you don't have those losing streaks. You know, if Vancouver wins last night, well, they get a little bit closer to the Jets. And I'm sure the Jets have a ton of games in hand on Vancouver, But by the win, at worst, you're going to be even after this two-game series. And if you win on Sunday, I mean, you're almost putting so much of a gap between yourself and the Canucks, especially given the games you have in hand, that it's sort of ridiculous to say. And I'm not saying that it's guaranteed to be lights out, but it's almost like it's lights out for Vancouver when you're not even a third of the way through the season.
Well, interestingly, I think this percentage is, someone tweeted yesterday, I think the Jets are right now a 75% odds favorite to make the playoffs, and Vancouver was about 17%. So, I mean, to your point, Drew, it's not looking good in Vancouver based on what they've had to deal with in terms of these long streaks and you know, feast and famine, whereas the Jets, because they've been able to bounce back after a loss, have put themselves into a position to stay competitive for really probably that third spot in the North.
Absolutely. And that's what's so important for the Winnipeg Jets there. I mean, you know, Mark Scheifele obviously had the beautiful breakaway goal and you know, Demko, he just deked Demko out, and that's a goal scorer's goal, as the proverbial saying goes. But what was most impressive to me from the Jets' perspective almost all game long is the back pressure, particularly by the forwards. There were a number of different occasions throughout the game where forwards were back checking so well. I can remember one from Kopp off the top of my head, one from Ehlers, and I believe also one from Matthew Perreault, if I'm not mistaken, where active sticks on Vancouver Canucks rushes really did a great job in preventing the Canucks from getting a quality scoring chance on what looked like initially to be an odd man rush.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt, Drew, that, you know, they were a very sharp team defensively. Like we talked about, you know, there were some decent chances that Vancouver had, you know, both at even strength and on the power play. But I really think, you know, the Jets carried through their effort from Wednesday night against Edmonton. Like I really mm-hmm. thought that was a game in which the Jets deserved at least a point, right? And, you know, when you're going up against the Oilers, you know that, you know, they have the ability to score goals and they're not very good defensively. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, the Jets were, you know, head and shoulders better than the Oilers, but I definitely think, you know, they carried the play for the majority of that game. And, you know, another point that I think, you know, needs to be mentioned is, you know, when Nate Thompson, it was announced that he was coming back, you know, you looked at those lines and you said, uh-oh, you know, Paul Maurice is going through the line blender. But even though, you know, the Jets from a possession point of view, you know, weren't fantastic last night, like, but you knew that with the familiarity with Scheifele and Wheeler and Connor, you know what you're going to expect out of those guys. And you guys know going back, you know, several weeks, you know, Stastny, Ehlers and Kopp is a line that I've really liked. And if you look at the possession numbers, you know, they were the Jets' best line last night. So, you know, I thought that overall, if the Jets do have to go with those line combinations again, you know, tomorrow in Vancouver, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, you do have the off chance that Pierre-Luc Dubois is ready to go.
Well, we will know more on that, Ezzy, to your point. We'll know more on that later on this afternoon when the Jets practice in Vancouver. And if
Dubois... It's at 4 o'clock Central.
4 o'clock Central is the practice time, so 2 o'clock Pacific. So, you know, obviously stay tuned to Dave. What's the website?
LegoCurve.com.
There you go. All the latest Jets practice news will be later on this afternoon, almost later on this evening on LegoCurve.com. We're company men. But, you know, to your point, I mean, I would expect that Dubois gets through the practice, you know, should get through the practice. I'd be surprised unless he has some sort of setback. I would expect him to be back in the lineup tomorrow. And then all of a sudden you have a full strength Winnipeg Jets team. The question becomes one of who comes out of the lineup if Dubois comes in tomorrow. And I would have to assume it's going to be Nate Thompson. But this is Paul Maurice we're talking about here, guys. And, you know, he always defers to the veterans. And I could also foresee a circumstance where it's Jansen Harkins coming out of the lineup. And that's not something that I would strongly recommend if Paul Maurice was asking me, but he's obviously not.
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking me, I would absolutely take Nate Thompson out over Jansen Harkins. I think Harkins has been good since he came back into the lineup, and nothing against Nate Thompson because, you know, that was his first game in quite some time, and I thought he was pretty good. I mean, obviously didn't play big minutes, but, you know, I also think it's going to be really interesting to see if Paul Maurice, if Dubois comes back, I should say, if Maurice moves Stastny back to the wing, right? Because we talked about, you know, the Lowry-Appleton-Stastny line. I don't know if you're calling that the third line. I don't think you're going to be calling that the fourth line, but I think that that line was really good in the, you know, the couple of games that they had together. Right. And even though Lowry, Appleton and Perreault, Dave, I think you'd agree, they weren't exactly, you know, at their best yesterday. you know, I think that line is very dependable. So I think Paul Maurice definitely has, you know, some big decisions to make, but it's never a bad thing when you can put Pierre-Luc Dubois back into the lineup.
Yeah, you know, the one thing I question is the value of doing it. If you're feeling good, if you feel like you can defeat the Canucks with the lineup that you've currently got, because if you don't put him back in, again, I'm not suggesting that they're rushing. Obviously, they're not because they didn't put him in yesterday. If he was close, because he wasn't wearing a non-contact uniform in practice, he was wearing a regular jersey. But to me, look at the value. If he doesn't play tomorrow, the Jets don't play again until Thursday. So you're going to give him that opportunity to heal up whatever's bothering him. And again, if he's ready to go, he's ready to go. And to Drew's point, we'll know that later this afternoon. But I just think there's a big value to giving him the opportunity to be healthy and ready to go, because really you need him for the stretched run, you know, and obviously there's a quarter of the season already done, but you can't afford to have him being hampered by something. And Blake Wheeler talked about it and his availability, because people have noticed that he's been moving better than he was. And he said the time that he had in between games gave him that opportunity. And he said in the last 5 to 7 days, he's feeling like himself. And so I think, to me, Pierre-Luc Dubois being able to feel 100% or as close to 100% as he's going to be in a regular season, especially a condensed one, I think that's significantly important for the Winnipeg Jets. So I think that definitely will factor in for them as to whether he is a player or not tomorrow. But again, we'll know more based on how he plays in practice today.
And Dave, I wanted to throw in one more thing, guys. Like, I realize, like, Mark Scheifele, and, you know, especially with, you know, Mike McIntyre's column in today's Winnipeg Free Press, I think absolutely, you know, Mark Scheifele should be given more credit, not just here, but like across the league, right? Like, we know he's on the 9-game point streak. You know, we know he's fourth or fifth in the entire league in scoring. He's at 22 points now, 21 points or 22 points.
23.
Sorry, there you go. 23. Forgot to factor in the points yesterday, Dave, but yeah. Like I think I'm not afraid to say this. I'll say it. I think he's absolutely, you know, in the Hart Trophy discussion early on this season. That's just my opinion, but you know, the way he's playing right now. And I think you could argue, guys, that he's not even playing at his best and he's fifth in the league in scoring. Like, I think he could play even better. And, you know, we've got Weber coming on shortly, and he had a really good piece on sportsnet.ca recently about how Mark Scheifele is trying to really improve his all around game. The other guy I wanted to mention that I think, even though he doesn't have any points in those last 5 games, like Drew mentioned back pressure at the top of the show about 15 minutes ago, right? Like, Andrew Copp to me is the perfect example of how a forward should play defensively. And, you know, he got a couple of minutes on the PK yesterday, a little bit on the power play. Like, Andrew Copp's play to me, even though, like I said, he hasn't been racking up the points, which he was, you know, red hot. Remember, he had the 4-point game early in the season. But like, Andrew Copp to me has taken his defensive game to another level. So I think, you know, I would have no problem if a guy like Copper stayed up on that second line with Pierre-Luc Dubois. I really like him, and I think he deserves to get those minutes.
Well, you know, to your point, Ezzy, about, you know, playing well without necessarily racking up the points, I think if you know, if you injected Paul Maurice with truth serum and you said, you know, what games lately have been the kind of games you want to see your team play, it would be Wednesday in Edmonton, even though it was a loss, and Friday last night against Vancouver. I think if Paul Maurice could bottle those games from a Jets perspective and replicate them night in, night out, he'd be quite happy with the Jets' performance, particularly Wednesday night, where they probably deserved a better fate in not getting at least 1 point. But, you know, it looked right. The team looked right on Wednesday, and then they looked right again yesterday with how they performed against the Vancouver Canucks. Ken Wiebe from Sportsnet is going to join us coming up here momentarily. We see him settling into his spot here. He's connecting to the audio. We'll be pleased to have Weber join us momentarily as soon as his audio connects. I think we got the check mark now. Kenny Wiebe, you're on mute, but as soon as you unmute yourself, I'm going to say welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on YouTube. How are you, handsome?
I'm well. Nice to see you emerge from that plant that was stuck behind you yesterday.
That's between two ferns with Drew Mindell on in the post-game Zoom media availability. The aesthetic looks good. That was what my concern was, in case that I'm not quite sure what the logic behind it is. Sometimes they show the media on national TV and sometimes they don't. And after our buddy Scotty Billick was getting some gears for how he looked on Wednesday night, I wanted to make sure that I looked as professional as I can be.
Yeah, I love it, and that's why I've gone with the Altona Maroons hoodie today to show on the with my friends here, the Curves.
There you go. You got to support the old roots. Were you going back to your baseball days, or is that your hockey days, or
this
both?
This is the hockey side. Yes, the Bisons on the baseball side.
Shout out to Corey Koski.
Yes, fortunate to have played against Corey for quite a few years, and one of the great human beings. As you guys know, he went a little bit further in his baseball career than I did.
But you know what?
But hold on, Weber. He hasn't been to as many baseball stadiums, I suspect, as you.
Well, I think he probably has. That time at the end of his career might have got him to all. You know what? I'm into the 36s now, so you might be right, Dave.
Well, there you go. Kenny, obviously brought you on to talk a little bit of Jets. Nice to see you, first of all. It's been a little while since we've had the opportunity to have you on the program, given we were with some different organizations there for a little while. But, you know, our friendship, it can obviously overcome anything. And, Kenny, last night's performance by the Jets, I was saying this just before you popped on, sure, they only get the one goal at 5-on-5, not counting the empty netter. But, you know, in terms of the sort of the defensive side of the game, and obviously the excellent goaltending from Laurent Brossoit, I thought that Paul Maurice would like a lot about what he saw from his team last night.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I had tuned in a little bit earlier, caught your commentary. The back pressure was fantastic yesterday. I mean, my colleague Sean Reynolds at The Athletic was talking about the ability to smother. There just wasn't a whole lot of room for the Lotto line last night. Elias Pettersson, yes, a couple of good chances, but Jets did a great job defensively, I thought. I mean, especially in the first period, until that wild and chaotic flurry at the end of the first. I mean, they had almost given up nothing. With the exception of the one backdoor chance, I think, for Pettersson. But that is a lot closer to the template than what the Jets want to be rolling out there on a regular basis. And you hit the nail on the head. It's funny. Most fans were upset with Wednesday, but if you were asking, and they were also upset with Paul Maurice's reaction, but the reason why he wasn't going to expend a lot of emotional toll on it was because they played way better in a 3-2 loss than they played in a 6-5 win where they built a 4-1 lead. That was a mirage, guys. That was 4 goals on 11 shots on a night where Mike Smith was not sharp. The Jets were far too loose even before the game, well before the game became a 5-5 track meet. So for me, I think they were also much more aggressive, both in terms of back pressure, but also in terms of their defensemen and their ability to force not just at the offensive blue line, but in the neutral zone. Vancouver never really got going on their offensive attack.
And I wanted to ask you about Mark Scheifele, because, you know, not only is he on the 9-game point streak and, you know, fifth or fourth last time I checked in NHL scoring, and you had a really good piece on sportsnet.ca talking about, you know, how Mark Scheifele continues to want to become an all-around good player. And you mentioned in the article that this is not something that, you know, he's just decided to become over the last year. This has been, you know, a work in progress throughout his entire career. And we know that, you know, he's been a point per game player for quite some time. But, you know, I mentioned this right before you came on, is what's most amazing to you about Mark Scheifele's play this year is that it almost seems like he's not even playing at his best. It almost seems like there's more that Mark Scheifele can give. And if that's the case, then, you know, we might see him eventually end up, top three in the league in scoring.
Yeah, first and foremost, thank you kindly for that, Ezzy. And David, thank you for the promotion, as always, on Illegal Curve. Helps amplify the voice for sure. In terms of Scheifele's play, bang on. And we also know early in the year, a lot of angst in Jets Nation about the defensive play and or effort of Mark Scheifele. There were certainly a couple of goals where he got caught in no man's land, caught in between. Some people would say caught napping. I wouldn't go that far. I think there were just a couple of times it was more a matter of indecision. So we've definitely seen that effort level elevated. I love what Paul Maurice had to say about this the other day. Because he got Mark Scheifele out of his comfort zone and had a bunch of different wingers with him in the early going, and even though, yes, he did go back to Old Faithful the last little bit here, having Kopp, having Ehlers on his line allowed Mark to reconnect with his own personal game. So I do agree that, I mean, again, another point that I've been trying to make here about Mark Scheifele, and I understand fans want more defensively, and that's okay, but look at the players that he is up in the scoring race with. Auston Matthews, Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Patrick Kane, these guys are not exactly Selke candidates, people. So there is always going to be a little bit of a give and take when it comes to an elite offensive player. That doesn't take a guy off the hook, guys, but it's a reminder that it's so rare when you have guys like Ryan O'Reilly, Sean Couturier, those guys that are able to perform at a high-end level at both ends of the ice. And that's not to say that they shouldn't be striving for that. And as you mentioned, Mark Scheifele has definitely shown a greater effort. And again, pointed out by Paul Maurice, going into the year, when I asked Paul about the spotlight shining on Mark in the North Division, he was the first guy to say that he embraced the opportunity to go head-to-head with Connor McDavid, with Austin Matthews. And we all know that sometimes when you go against those high-end guys, there are going to be some things that you don't like the look of what shows up on the highlight reel at the defensive end of the ice. But he's also done such an exceptional job down low in the offensive zone. His ability to, you know, slide off checks and create offense that way is really impressive. And the other part that I wrote about, his ability to slide into the Patrick Laine spot, the Alex Ovechkin spot on that left wing side, it's gotten him way more offensive touches on the power play. And when a player like that is touching the puck more, you're into it. You're feeling so good, whether that means finding a line mate or being able to unleash a shot like we saw the other night on that vintage cross ice one-timer. I mean, he's feeling exceptionally good about his game, and for good reason. And I agree with you. I mean, the beauty of Mark Scheifele, there's always another level that he's pushing to get to.
Now, Kenny, you always need secondary scoring, and the Jets can have sometimes secondary and third level scoring with all the talent they have. But one player who I feel has stepped up his game and really seems to have blossomed is Mason Appleton. And he's a guy who, again, early in the season, didn't look like he had it all going all together. So what do you think it is? Do you think it's the Adam Lowry influence? What do you think it is that's really allowed that Mason Appleton to kind of get his game to that next level?
I mean, certainly helps playing with Adam Lowry, especially the level that Lowry's playing with. The reason why I chose Mason Appleton as one of those guys who could surprise is his ability to finish. He has not shown that ability up to this point on a consistent basis offensively, but there's a comfort factor knowing that he is a more established NHL player. I mean, I think we saw Jansen Harkins go through it last year a little bit. And to a degree, I think another place we're going to go, Christian Vesalainen is starting to follow in the Jansen Harkins path. But this is something that's gone on for a long time. And I draw a lot of parallels to Andrew Kopp. No, Mason Appleton's not going to be playing center, but his ability to give you a consistent game on the fourth line. You move him up to the third line, he can give you that. Oh, last year you need him to play on the right wing with Blake Wheeler for a stretch. Sign me up. I'm ready to go. The big difference for Mason Appleton this year, because he's feeling so much better, he was able to have an impact in training camp. Paul Maurice has mentioned this several times, and he's bang on. Mason was the kind of guy whose game builds during the course of the year. You pencil him in for the year after, and for whatever reason, and I don't think it was because he became complacent, Mason wasn't having that impact in training camp that you were expecting and what you saw at the end of the previous season. So this year, with the benefit of the extra training time or whatever it is, and also just Mason knowing, you know, he's a part of the penalty kill, he's a part of this, he's been leaned on a little bit more, he was able to come in with a positive frame of mind. And also knowing that with Jack Rozovic not going to be there, he's first in line for that third line role, and he was going to make darn sure he was going to take full advantage. Let's not forget, Dave, you know this better than anybody. This is a guy that had 66 points as a professional rookie after leaving Michigan State, where he would have been the captain of the team. Probably a tough decision for him, made the right decision, immediately makes an offensive impact on that high-end Manitoba Moose team, and has now been able to find that offense. For the last 3 years, I've been saying that Mason Appleton is the type of player that can replace the offense produced by Brandon Tanev on that line with Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry. But now he's starting to get and show it on a more consistent basis. This is a guy that can give you consistent double-digit goal scoring, but I also think he's playing with a little bit more of an edge. He's skating a little bit better. Not that he wasn't a good skater before, but he's able to impose his will a little bit more. And now he's confident. We saw it again. We saw it on the goal the other night, but we also saw it again last night, a couple times, almost, you know, Blake Wheeler-esque not quite the same level of speed, but the ability to burn down that right wing and get a really good shot off. I think that's something that we've been seeing on a more consistent basis, and we'll see it even more as he becomes more and more comfortable.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet, a good friend of ours, is our guest. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, last night's game in Vancouver, a Jets victory by a 2-0 margin. Of course, the rematch comes tomorrow night back in the left coast of Canada. You know, Kenny, you mentioned in your answer about Mason Appleton, you mentioned Christian Vesalainen. And if I'm Christian Vesalainen last night, boy, you know, seeing Nate Thompson in the lineup after I think I've played pretty decently for the last couple of games sticks in my craw a little bit. If you're Vesalainen, you know, what are you thinking in your head and how are you getting back into the lineup so that you become the NHL regular that you think you are?
For sure. It's a great question. And you know what? It should stick in his craw, but it's all about how he responds to it in his next opportunity. I mean, we all see the strides he's making, and has he made a case to stay in the lineup? Absolutely. But he's not an established NHLer yet. There are going to be times when a veteran plays ahead of you, but that means continue to, you know, work incredibly hard in practice. If I'm Christian Vesalainen, guys, I am spending as much time with Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp at the end of practices. If Paul Maurice says it's a prerequisite to be on special teams, I know I'm more of an offensive player, but I want to spend time with the penalty killer because you know what? I want that penalty killing job. If that gets me an extra 3 or 4 minutes a game and gets me in the lineup, sign me up. I'm ready to go. I love what I've seen in terms of his ability to, use his body along the walls. He's been much better on the walls. Dave saw this a lot last year. I was fortunate to see 2 Moose games at the end of the year. I love the chemistry between he and David Gustafson. I want to see those two guys on the fourth line sooner than later. And for me, Drew, I totally understand. He would be frustrated for sure, but it's part of the deal. And I understand the immediate reaction for a lot of fans is now you're going to tick off another player who wants to leave. Guess what? This is how it works. You have to continue to pound away and earn your job. And we can't say that Paul Maurice never puts veterans in. Look what happened to Jansen Harkins. He went from completely on the periphery of being a fringe prospect to being an NHL regular. It probably took a little bit longer than he had hoped. It's taking longer than Vesalainen had hoped. But to me, this also goes back a little bit to that first year. The other reason fans are frustrated because this guy started in the NHL 2 years ago. And then not only did he get sent to the Moose, but then went back and forth and then went back and played in Jokerit, skipped the World Juniors. I honestly think that development year was a major hiccup for Christian Vesalainen. Not because it was wrong to go back, but because he played in, you know, essentially 3 different systems. And then because of the frustration with the travel, he missed out on a gold medal winning experience that would have been incredible for his career. So last year when he came to the Moose, it was almost like he was starting over, especially in the process of integrating to the North American style. And secondly, because he wasn't able to dominate offensively, as a first round pick, you know, the Jets and fans have seen all these guys jump in, whether it's Kyle Connor and Jack Rossovic and Mason Appleton lighting it up with the Moose, or eventually Kyle Connor becoming a consistent 30 plus goal scorer at the NHL level. Because it's taken a little longer for Christian Vesalainen, people are wondering what's up, but I think it's just a matter of time. And I mean, we were talking about Lowry and Appleton, man. I think you could make a case that Vesalainen could be an exceptional winger with those two guys, given his shooting ability. So for me, Drew, I understand the frustration, but I think it's more a matter of time for Vesalainen. But I totally understand. I mean, it's similar to the start of the year with Heinola. Everyone wants to see him right now. I would just caution that a little bit of patience and you're going to see that player that we're all starting to envision.
Yeah, Weber, I think you make a lot of good points about Vesalainen. It just so happens that, you know, you want to get Nate Thompson in and the Jets are very deep at forward. But I agree with you. If you look at the steps that he's taken over the last year, I think he's going to be fine. And I think he will have a spot in the lineup at some point. And as you said, that could be, you know, playing alongside Adam Lowry. And we got to talk about, you know, Neil Pionk and Derek Forbort, Kenny, because, you know, I know that, you know, Pionk had a great offensive season last year, but you know, I'm a New Jersey Devils fan, and you know, I've been wanting to make this comparison for a while. And Neil Pionk to me reminds me of Brian Rafalski, like a small American defenseman who doesn't get enough credit, for how good he is defensively. And you look at Pionk and, you know, going up against, you know, the big boys of the Edmonton Oilers and, you know, oftentimes going up against the other team's best players. And I think, and you can, you know, agree or disagree. I think you're probably going to agree, but I think what we've seen this year out of Pionk, especially with, you know, his fellow, you know, Duluthman, Derek Forbort, is that we're starting to see a more complete defenseman and a guy that's not just, you know, good on the power play, a guy who that's arguably turned into, you know, the Jets' second best defenseman.
Yeah. And I even think that right now he's been the Jets' best defenseman, you know, with apologies to Josh Morrissey. And that's not a knock. I think that's just a matter of, there have been times when Morrissey's been trying to do a little bit too much, whereas Pionk has really embraced and settled into that shutdown role. And you're exactly right. We expected there to be some offensive upside there. Even with the Rangers, he was running the second power play unit a lot. So the fact that there was some offense there was not a surprise. The biggest question mark was on the defending side. How would he handle the defending? I had good scouting reports from outside the organization, when the trade was made in 2019, but I don't think that anybody, at least not to my recollection, told me that he was going to be on a shutdown pairing because he was viewed as more of an offensive guy. And I like the Brian Rafalski comparison. I think maybe Brian was a little bit more prolific offensively and I don't remember, I mean, I don't watch the Devils as closely as you, but shout out to the Christmas tree uniforms that are back to some degree. I think that made a lot of people Devils fans back in the day. But I don't remember, I remember Rafalski playing hard, but I don't remember him being as physical as Neil Pionk. And that element of his game was there to a degree last year, but he's definitely elevated in that area. That hit that he delivered on Leon Draisaitl down low, taking runs at Connor McDavid with regularity, I don't think that we were expecting that. I mean, to be honest, those types of plays are more Trouba-esque than Rafalski or anyone else. But I've loved the way that Neil Pionk has played. He's been absolutely outstanding and, I mean, really deserves credit for his ability. I mean, again, I remember at the start of the year when I wrote that Morrissey was, you know, unquestionably the Jets' number one defenseman, and I got a couple of responses. Well, what about Neil and what about this? And, you know, to be honest, right now, Pionk is playing at a little bit higher level than Josh Morrissey. And, you know, having that, we talk about internal competition up front all the time. When you see one of your fellow defensemen playing at that level, I think it's only going to help Josh Morrissey. And I do think that Morrissey is starting to feel better on the ice. And I think that he was a big part of that defensive effort that Drew and I talked about from the very beginning, but Pionk's been awesome. And let's not forget the partner. The biggest question, you know, there were many questions about the defense going into the year. One of them was, could Derek Forbort handle top 4 minutes? And some people, based on a little bit of recency bias, if he's on the Flames third pairing, how can he play in the Jets top four? And I mean, let's not forget this guy dealt with some major back issues last year. He had been used with Drew Doughty regularly in Los Angeles on that top pairing. And we know that Doughty is used in a shutdown role. And yes, I understand some people pointed out the fact that that was on a lottery team. Sure, fair point. But again, in my research in the summertime, talking to some scouts, they felt that Forbort could handle, you know, 17, 18 minutes a game. Now, are they surprised he's playing 24? Absolutely. But again, this is a first round draft pick. He's a guy that has some talent. And again, we knew he was going to bring some stiffness to the back end and that he would help the penalty kill. But there were a few offensive plays that he made early in the year that really stood out. And the other part, when I mentioned stiffness, the exchange with Nils Höglander at the end of the game last night, the Jets are happy to have that. They don't have a lot of scrum creators, let's say. They do have some team toughness and togetherness, no doubt about that. But not a lot of them are of the imposing variety. There's no Dustin Byfuglien pulling two people out of the packet. Out of the pack type of people on that lineup. So there's obviously chemistry between those two guys. Skating for the entire summer certainly helps. But again, in one of my other columns, not trying to self-promote here, but I mean,
you can self-promote. That's what we do best.
You guys do enough of the promotion for me, but man, what I wrote about is like, we'll probably go to Dubois eventually here also, but the reaction was almost exactly the same from the fan base. What happened here? Jacob Trouba just had 50 points and plays in the top pairing, and all the Jets got was a undrafted college free agent. Well, that undrafted college free agent has turned into an incredibly valuable piece for the Winnipeg Jets, which is my, again, foreshadowing advice to those looking at the 19 points to zero in the trade and saying that it's an unmitigated disaster. Let's let these things unfold and unpack a little bit before making broad declarations that maybe the general manager didn't know what he was doing. These guys are doing their research before the trigger is pulled in these deals. It doesn't always work out. But I think we're going to see a similar return from Pierre-Luc Dubois, obviously a different style of player. But once he gets healthy, you're going to see Dubois make the same type of impact with the forward group that Neil Pionk has made to the back end.
To steal a line from my colleague, Mr. Manouk, it is an instant gratification world. So people want they want a hat trick every game for as soon as a trade is made. You know that, Kenny, as well as anybody else. Ken Wiebe of Sportsnet is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, Kenny, well, I was going to ask you about prospects, but we can ask about Pierre-Luc Dubois. That one it works as well. Do you think that, I mean, obviously we're going to see what happens at practice this afternoon in Vancouver and that'll factor into whether he plays tomorrow. But do you think there'll be some value to letting him sit until that Thursday game against the Habs here in Winnipeg versus getting him back in the lineup? I don't want to say potentially too early, but at least giving him that buffer zone. And long-term, where do you really see him as an ideal fit in this Jets lineup?
Yeah, first and foremost, I was at the afternoon Moose game, David, yesterday. We can get to the prospects as well, several of whom I was impressed with.
Yeah.
In terms of Dubois, I heard your section about that as well. And I would say under normal circumstances, I would agree fully. And that will certainly be a consideration. For me, because he's been in a regular jersey a couple of times but hasn't had a full practice, I would lean the other way. I think because of the quarantine process, the 3 weeks between games to begin with, I would lean towards playing Dubois because he has the extra rest. We know this has been, the part of the frustration for fans and media is that the Jets have not been forthcoming when it comes to this injury. Paul Maurice did say that it is soft tissue. So for me, I see a groin injury. I don't know this for sure. I am not a doctor. I just play one on the internet. I feel as though it was probably a groin injury that Dubois is dealing with. So the reason why the Jets are being cautious is because with 17 games in March, if you don't take care of the groin injury for anyone who's ever had one, it lingers and the Jets can't afford it to linger for 20 games, for 30 games. You're right. They need him for the stretch run, but they also need to integrate him as soon as they can. So I think if it had been a playoff game last night, Dubois would have played. So for me, I am, again, not a lead pipe lock by any stretch, but I expect him to play tomorrow as long as there has been no setback in the last couple of days and he comes through today's practice. I'm guessing it'll be a game time decision based on the update from the Jets. But in terms of where he fits, I want to see him with Nikolaj Ehlers. I want to see him a little bit with Kyle Connor also. Going back to Scheifele, I know you guys also touched on Andrew Kopp. Kopp provides a level of security blanket for Mark Scheifele defensively. So for me, even though he plays well with Kyle Connor, obviously, we know that Paul Maurice started Kyle Connor with Pierre-Luc Dubois, so he wants to see if there's something there. For me, I want to see if there's something there with Nikolaj Ehlers also. And if you put all three together, let's see what happens. But I think there can be some movement in that top six. I want to see Ehlers on that side. Dubois is a powerful skater. He is a very good creator. Because of that powerful speed and power combo, he backs defensemen off, and nobody on the Jets backs the defenseman off better than Nikolaj Ehlers. So because of his shooter's mentality that he started adopting last season, I think those two could be extremely dangerous together. Then you put a straight line player with speed like Kyle Connor on the left wing, who also has incredible scoring touch and finishing ability and also passing ability that is often deferred because of his scoring ability. I think that could be an incredibly impressive line for the Winnipeg Jets. And that's how I want to see them at least start to see if there's some chemistry there.
Okay, Kenny, well, then I'm going to follow up and ask you about those prospects, because right now there are five defensive prospects. Obviously, you've got Cole Perfetti up forward, but the defensive prospects for the Winnipeg Jets right now with the Manitoba Moose, they're all playing. I mean, Johnny Kovacevic is the only one 2017 third rounder isn't, because he was suspended the last two games. But you've got Heinola, you've got Samberg, you've got Chisholm, you've got Gavanke, And like I said, you got Kovacevic, and Green is injured right now. So really, you have six Jets defensive prospects playing with the Manitoba Moose. You watched them last night, or yesterday afternoon, sorry, against the Marlies. What kind of stood out with you for you with those young players?
Yeah, three quick things. Hainala obviously was my player I was probably watching most intently, and I love the fact that he's on a pairing with Dylan Sandberg, who, as you saw all week, David, is incredibly comfortable on his offside. If you didn't know he was a left-handed shooter, rookie pro, you wouldn't even notice he was playing on his left side, which to me is an incredibly important development for the Jets. Lots of debate as to why it wasn't Hainala playing over on the right side, because he spent some of that game with Josh Morrissey against Ottawa on the right side himself. My theory is that in the short term, for him to get onto the Jets lineup, he will play on the third pairing with a Dylan DeMello. That's why he's playing the left side now. Again, this is just a theory from having covered the American League for 10 years and having a peek at the Jets roster. In terms of Sandberg, love the mobility. When you play with Hainala, guess what? You need to play a quiet game, because there's a lot of activity in Ville Hainala's game. And what I saw yesterday was activity in a good way. Yes, I know there were some high event shifts that led to goals against, but for me, I loved the risk-reward formula yesterday. I thought he played incredibly active, but not careless. He didn't get caught. He wasn't leaving Sandberg alone on two-on-ones. Love the Sandberg's ability to skate, move the puck. He obviously has size. He has a little bit of physical nature to his game. And the more comfortable he feels at the pro level, the more physical I think that he can be. He also has that Jacob Trouba open ice hitting ability that, again, you're not going to see it a lot now as he's getting his feet wet. But let's not forget, this is a guy who hasn't played a game since last March. So the fact that he's able to carry 20 minutes while playing against men and is not looking out of place at all is a testament to Dylan Sandberg, never mind playing on his offside. Hainala has been great for me. He's going to find a little bit of frustration at the American League level, because there aren't enough elite level players on that roster. And that's not a knock on the players on the roster, incredibly hardworking, but they're more of a lunch pail crew for me, Dave, as you saw this week. There aren't as many high end or elite hockey IQ talents. Cole Perfetti is one already at 19 years old. But the other thing quickly on Perfetti, he looked like a guy who had played 4 games in 5 days yesterday. And that's not a knock on him. That just is the physical toll that is is extracted from a player. But that was a reminder for me, for all the fans who were saying they wanted Cole Perfetti in the lineup now. They should have gone to the game yesterday. And again, Cole Perfetti is going to figure it out. He's going to get stronger. And even in a game where he looked a little bit tired, and again, we know it's not from a lack of preparation. It's from the fact he's a 19-year-old kid who needs to physically mature. He still was able to show off that intelligence. I love the line he was playing on yesterday with Christian Reichel and CJ Cease moving over to the wing. And there again, too, you have that safety, security blanket. Cease being a center at the times when Perfetti's down low, Cease can handle the down low responsibilities defensively when the puck changes possession. And they did that numerous times yesterday. Perfetti had a couple great scoring opportunities. Love the way that he played, even though you could tell it was a physically taxing game. Back to the back end. You saw this here with your own eyes too. Declan Chisholm's skating ability. We knew it was strong. It is exceptional. His puck moving ability is great. His ability to walk the line laterally at this level as a first year professional is outstanding. Yes, it's going to take time. And we've already noticed Pascal shouted it out during his post game avail earlier this week. It's not just they knew about the offense, his ability to put in the work to get better defensively is already in bloom after 4 games in the American Hockey League. So for me, that is an incredibly important development. We know this is one of the most, really high-end scoring talents. It's all going to be about where Chisholm fits in. Can he run a power play at the NHL level? We know Leon Gavanka ran the Moose power play last year. Well, now he's got some competition there with both Chisholm and Hainala, no matter how long Hainala sticks around back there. Gavanka puck moving was pretty solid yesterday. He didn't really stand out for me, but again, that's probably more to do with how good the other guys were. I don't think that Gavanka played poorly by any stretch yesterday, but I certainly noticed those other three a little bit more. And again, when I spoke to Marc-Andre Dumont for my piece on Pierre-Luc Dubois, he had a lot of great things to say about Gavanka, about his ability to learn and adapt and to push himself when there are other high-end players around him. So I expect him to continue to play well. And Kovacevic is another one of those interesting guys, Dave. I mean, pretty mobile for a big guy. I think that the Jets are always looking for, you know, potential shutdown guys. I mean, there's some Tucker Poolman, I think, in Kovacevic, if you will. I think he could be a good, steady partner for somebody. Is he more of a depth guy, or can he become a full-time NHLer? That'll be interesting for me to see. But the last one on the D there, Sandberg and Stanley. How about a Twin Towers type of pairing? Both shutdown guys. Sandberg already has shown that he can play the offside. Man, those two guys could be, you know, real physical force, but also two guys that have been pretty mobile in terms of their, you know, taking their games to that next level.
Kenny, last question for you. Before every Jets game, you and Sean Reynolds go live on Instagram. This is a two-parter. One, did you ever think of yourself as an Instagram celebrity? And between you and Reynolds, which one is the handsome one and which one is the smart one?
Well, in my previous TV work, it was obvious that I was the diva when I was working with our good friend Sarah Orleski, and she was the seasoned professional. When it comes to Sean and I, he is the instigator, as you guys know. He does his best. I know a little bit about instigating myself on the ice, but when it comes to the off ice, I prefer the neutral ground on a lot of situations. Sean has done a really good job of spearing me in the stomach and slashing me on the wrist. But I would give him fair warning that if you asked players in the Manitoba Junior League and a few of them in the SEMHL, I know the perfect spot between elbow pad and cuff of the glove. So sometimes if you're going to instigate, you might want to be on the lookout for some retaliation. So it's been a lot of fun for sure. Sean's the one with the hair, as we know. This is nothing new for me. When I used to do moose tracks with Jim Toth, I had some hair back then in those AHL days, but I've never been... I haven't been the guy with the hair since my Jaromir Jagr days as a member of the Pembina Valley Hawks. So unfortunately for me, that was the only part of Jagr that I could duplicate, was the ability to grow a mullet in high school. So
we got to see photos of that then. If you're bringing that up, next time you're on with us, you better come equipped with a big background photo of you with a mullet.
Somebody did send me a recent photo of a Pembina Valley Hawks hockey card. It wasn't a full mullet, but definitely has some hair on it, and definitely happy to share it. If you can't make fun of yourself, who can you make fun of? Great to join you guys. Thanks for having me. Wishing you obviously continued success with this platform. And as I let you know, personally, certainly felt for you guys and all my friends over at the station. Obviously, I've had a long relationship over there as well. Tough time for the industry, but you guys are versatile. You're not afraid to adopt the new medium. And I know this is going to be a great venture for you guys, and I'm happy to be part of it whenever you have me on to join you.
We appreciate that, Weaver. And I think that you're being too humble. I think you're just as handsome as Sean Reynolds.
That's very kind of you.
Bald is beautiful, Kenny. You and I. Bald is beautiful.
Got to embrace it.
That's right. Kenny Weeb of Sportsnet. You know how to follow his work on Twitter at Weeb's World, and of course everywhere on sportsnet.ca and on Instagram before every Jets game alongside Sean Reynolds. Kenny, thank you. You gave us a lot of your time this morning, and we appreciate it, brother.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the show and have a great weekend here.
Take care, Kenny.
You too,
Kenny. There he goes. Ken Weeb of Sportsnet joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Ken was shooting some fire today.
I liked it. I like a fired up.
Wait, Ken's still here. This is awkward. I'm trying to be calm.
There he goes.
And he's still there.
No, he's gone now. But I like Kenny when he's bringing the heat. That's very true there, Dave. Let me just do a quick read for our sponsors. We remind you, of course, to help support the Illegal Curve sponsors, because they keep this show coming each and every week for you. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. YouTube.com. Lots of great conversation happening in the YouTube chat. We encourage you to check that out. Just subscribe to our channel, YouTube.com. Just search for Illegal Curve Hockey, search for Illegal Curve Radio. Subscribe, hit that subscribe button, smash that subscribe button, and you'll be notified each and every time when we are live and when we post all the post-game video on YouTube.com on our YouTube channel. Still to come on this morning's program, the lawman Gary Lawless is going to join us and our buddy Anthony Sanfilippo. He's going to join us from Philadelphia. Much more to come. We're going to talk right now, though, about Neil Pionk and the performance of the Jets defenseman so far this season, really stepping up his game to another level. We knew the offense was there based on what he did last year, but I think the defense and the physicality is what is surprising so many of us right now. And he's going to cash in big time, given that he is, of course, a restricted free agent at the end of the season. Let me start with you, Dave Minuk. I guess to start with sort of just a general thought on the performance of Neil Pionk and what we've seen from his development so far this season.
Well, I mean, I think we've seen a player who's picked up where he left off. I mean, I think he's a guy who, and Ken made a very good point. I mean, if everyone recalls what happened when that trade went down, we don't need to really go back that far, but the truth is when that trade went down, people were like, what the hell just happened? You just gave up Jacob Trouba for, as Ken said, an unsigned college free agent draft pick or signer. And so you're thinking to yourself, last year, was that an anomaly? Is that what you're coming to expect? Because of course the numbers in New York weren't very good, but that New York team was atrocious. So he looked like he's just picked up where he left off. He looked like a guy who's going to get paid. Let me tell you that. He's definitely going to get a very nice bump in salary next season, but he's a guy, I think his points projection, if he was playing a full season, would be somewhere in the 70 point range right now, based on what he's done, if you extrapolate it. And I just think he's a guy who's added an element. And you know, it's interesting, like Murat Attest in The Athletic had a piece about Pionk and about his quote mean streak and him being a kind of a nasty player. And again, Pionk isn't a big guy. We think of him as a mobile defenseman, like as he said, more of a Rafalski than a Stevens. And to me, you know, we're seeing a guy who's really bringing that more physical element. We're seeing a guy going for those open ice hits that we really haven't come to expect from him. So I think he's become to Kenny's point, I think he's right now the top defenseman on the Winnipeg Jets. And perhaps, you know, the comfort with Derek Forbort has really meant a lot for him. The Duluth brotherhood, as you will. And I talked to Dylan Sandberg about, you know, that idea of players having comfort being with guys that they're familiar with. So that's a good thing as well. And, whoa, we got another big guest right here, Gary Lawless.
We'll keep talking about Neil Pionk a little bit later on in the show, but joining us now, Gary Lawless, the lawman, joins us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's putting in his headphones, so we'll let him get set up there before he hits that unmute button. I can see the smirk quickly appearing on Gary's face because it's been a long time, lawman. How are you, brother?
Great, great, great. You've got a beard.
Yes.
Ezra has a beard. Dave looks handsome as ever. That's all I'm going to say.
What do you have on your face there? You got a little bit of gray going on there, my friend.
Yes, I'm auditioning for Santa Claus. So
you got to come back to Winnipeg and get the snow. Then you don't get that in Vegas. But I guess Lake Tahoe is where the NHL's just out your window there.
Snowing right now. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
We saw the photos, of course, earlier in the week or yesterday. The photos were flying all over Twitter. It just looks like an absolutely beautiful setup there on the golf course overlooking the lake for the today and then tomorrow, of course, the two Lake Tahoe outdoor games that the NHL is putting on this season.
Yeah, I'm actually working for NHL Network this weekend as well, so I'm staying for the whole weekend. So I'll do the radio broadcast with Dan Duva today for the Golden Knights and Avalanche game, and then I'll do some NHL Network stuff after the game, and then tomorrow I'll do NHL Network stuff surrounding the Bruins and the Flyers. So we got here on Thursday evening, so didn't go over to the rink Thursday night, but Dan and I took a shuttle over early yesterday morning before the Golden Knights practice, and first of all, like this Edgewood Resort is really beautiful. You turn in and it's this beautiful winding driveway and a big clubhouse. And you get out, walk around the corner, and there is like, I didn't know where to look. To my left is Lake Tahoe and the Sierra Nevada mountains. And Dave, Lake Tahoe's got nothing on Lake Winnipeg, except for the mountain.
Yeah. Little mountain there.
And then to your right was the setup for the rink. And, you know, we've all been to outdoor rinks before and played on them and, and we've seen you've seen the commercials for, you know, beer companies. They stage those mountain lake rinks, you know, and they're very impressive, but this was the greatest outdoor rink I'd ever seen. Like as I got closer, Winnipeg's Derek King, who builds who's in charge of ice for the NHL. You guys will remember him. He worked at Winnipeg Arena. He goes back that far, and then worked at MTS Center doing the ice for the Moose and the Jets before the NHL snatched him away. Pardon me, guys. So he's on the ice. There's Zambonis whirling around. They've got these two huge chalets on one side, this big scoreboard that they've built. And our radio position is on the side where those chalets are, looking across at where the players' benches are and beyond to the lake. And if you sit on the right angle, you look over the boards and you look over the far board, and it's like an infinity pool because it goes straight from the board to the lake. And then there's this drone starts whizzing around. NBC has a drone there that they're going to use for the footage today. It's just, then the players, they started coming down. Vegas practice had practiced first, and both teams did the same thing. They wore their game uniforms and toques for a team picture. Then they took the game jerseys and toques off. The equipment guys handed them practice jerseys and helmets, and then they had their practice. But like when they came down, Keegan Kolesar from Winnipeg was one of the first guys to come down, and it was in the reverse retro red, and he had the toque on, and it was just they just looked so great. And then you're like, you know, I don't know if you guys coach minor hockey or something. Like I haven't been. I go to my daughter's practices, and I'm down at the ice level. But for the NHL, I've spent the last 20 years sitting like at the top of the building, yeah. And there you're right there, right against the glass. And Ryan Reeves, of course, he skates by, sees me there, takes the stick, slashes it against the glass. I'm like, I jump, but I wasn't expecting it. Then once the guys saw that, they started firing pucks at the glass. So it really, really cool. And then Colorado, they had some things have never changed, guys. You asked me one question and I don't stop talking.
That's okay. It makes our jobs a lot easier, Gary.
Keep going.
Colorado had their reverse retro jerseys are the Nordiques logo, but in the Avalanche colors. Mm-hmm. And they looked, I'm partial. I like their reds better, but it was the Colorado ones really, really beautiful as well.
And Lawman, I want to jump in here because on that topic of the reverse retro jerseys of both the Avalanche and Golden Knights look awesome. Let's get it right out there that the gold helmets are fantastic. I don't care what anybody says. I'm not going to hear any arguments. Those gold helmets rule. So I want to get that. I want to get that right off the bat.
Let me guess. Ezra likes them. Drew hates them. And Dave has a measured approach. I'm not sure yet.
How can you hate those? I don't understand. Honestly, Lawman.
That's true.
I think they're too much. I mean, you know, Gary, you know us pretty well. You know us pretty well.
This is Vegas, baby. Come on. Vegas,
Drew. There's no such thing.
Yeah, what are you talking about too much? They're awesome. They're beautiful. But, you know,
I was on board with the white gloves and I was on board with the jerseys, but to me, the gold helmets it was almost like they were a little too shiny. And now if you need me, I'm going to go outside and scream at a cloud like the old man that I am.
Well, people forget that the LA Kings, when they played Colorado at Air Force last year, they wore the silver chrome ones and in their outdoor game. So we're not the first ones to do it with Mike Altieri, the great communications czar for the LA Kings. When I was tweeting about it, he's like, hey, remember whose idea this was? Because my take on it is this. And I think we can, I'm looking at you fine gentlemen through the Zoom, and you are the same as me. None of us knows anything about fashion. So let's not pretend that we do, okay? We are not style meisters. But what I like about it, and it's what I like about the Golden Knights, they try stuff. Absolutely. They are not, and they're not afraid to walk out on a limb. Like, you remember the backlash in 17-18 when people saw the opening for our game. A lot of people hated it. You know who loved it? New fans and kids. Yep. They were riveted by it. And last time I checked, we're fourth out of four, and we're trying to move up. So do we go too far? I don't think so. Some people might, but I think other teams could go a little farther. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, I agree, Lawman. And, you know, we want to get into the game this afternoon between the Golden Knights and Avalanche, two of the best teams in the league. I wanted to just sticking with what you were talking about with Lake Tahoe. And I think, you know, we would all agree, and everybody that has seen the visuals would agree that they're absolutely stunning with, you know, the water in the background and the mountains. And what I wanted to ask you was, you know, going forward, because we know there's going to be many more outdoor games, do you think the NHL is going to look at either having more games at Lake Tahoe or other types of I'm not sure if we're talking golf courses, but, you know, traditionally we've seen these games in football stadiums, but I saw a picture of the setup at Lake Tahoe, and it actually looked like a painting. Like it looked like it almost looks like what your dream outdoor game would look like. So do you think that this is going to be the norm going forward, that we're going to see these types of games, maybe, you know, in a place like Lake Louise or other places like that?
Gary Bettman will get an email on Monday from someone in his office that is in charge of getting the TV numbers for things like this. And if the TV number is monstrous, then it will be, okay, there's something here. You know, how do we do this again? Now, they could have done limited seating here. Like, don't forget, COVID's the reason they're doing it in the first place. But they could have done limited seating. You know, no, you guys are all CFL fans. We've all seen those temporary stadium seats that they put up. They did it at the old Winnipeg Stadium. They did it at Taylor Field in Regina, or what did they call it at the end? Is it Mosaic Stadium? Maybe, I'm not sure. Anyways, you know,
Mosaic Stadium.
Yeah, we've all seen those temporary stands. They cost about $600 a seat to erect. So, you know, if you're charging $1,000-$1,500 a seat and you put up 5,000 seats at one of these events, there's another way to still make it intimate, still be able to go to incredible vistas. And I think this was a great idea. I think this was turning a disadvantage into an advantage. I think the NHL has done an incredible job in that regard. Whether or not it's something that continues, we'll wait and see. We still here, guys?
Yeah, Drew's muted me, and Gary, he tries to limit how much I can say, so I had to unmute myself.
You let Drew have charge of that?
I know. Unfortunately, it's his. He set up the Zoom. We're going through something right now. We'll figure it out.
Look. If it wasn't me, what are our options?
Well, it's not Ezzy.
You could bring Remus out of a legal curve retirement.
No. Remus has got a kid now, Gary. He's got different priorities altogether.
Right. Gary, the option is we get rid of Drew.
I actually think that's hilarious that Remus has a kid. It's like a four. It's like a four-year-old parenting.
You know who doesn't think it's hilarious? His wife.
No, the real question, Gary, is what's funnier: Remus having a kid or Ezzy having two kids? That's the illegal curve question of the day.
Ezzy has the biggest heart in Winnipeg. I bet you he's a tremendous, tremendous father. And if he's not,
I appreciate that, Lawman.
Naomi would kick his ass.
It's true.
Yes. You know, Gary, you're not a born Winnipegger, but you may as well be called a Winnipegger because you spent so much time here. You developed so many relationships here. But what is that like being within that Vegas organization? Because there are so many Manitoba connections, both at the NHL level and the AHL level.
It is interesting. You know, so I'm from Peterborough, Ontario. Yep. And there was a time when Peterborough was kind of like this NHL factory. The Peterborough They played, there was great hockey players from Peterborough. And then, of course, there was the Peterborough Petes. And, you know, I can remember early on in my writing career, I was in Chicago for a Moose versus Wolves game. Dallas Aikens, who's from Peterborough, was a referee, was the captain of the Moose. No, sorry, he was playing for the Wolves. Ryan Reddy, another kid from Peterborough, was playing for the Moose. Dean Morton was the referee. I went to kindergarten in Peterborough with Dean. And I was upstairs writing, and it was all these Peterborough connections. And that's kind of what I always saw. Well, now I lived in Winnipeg for 18 years, and my family still is lucky enough to have a place on Lake Winnipeg. So my daughter, you know, like I hear Winnipeg four times a day. Like it's, you know, they had this in Winnipeg. They don't have this in Vegas. They have this. She loves Winnipeg. Don't get me wrong. She's still got an old beat up Jets t-shirt that every once in a while I'll sneak into her room and have to take off her back when she's sleeping and put a Golden Knights t-shirt on her. She gets conflicted sometimes, which I'm proud of. She's loyal to her hometown. Anyways, she's a Golden Knights fan at heart. Now it's Manitoba connections. And so, and it's funny, Dave, like it struck me yesterday. I looked out and at one point in time, Stone, Glass, and Kolesar, who am I missing? I'm missing somebody, I think. We're all
Ryan Reeves.
Yeah. We're all kind of, you know, and I wanted to stop them and ask them what all their community clubs were so that I could kind of tweet, you know, this is just like, so Reeves is from, what's his neighborhood there?
Fort Garry Lawman.
Yeah, okay. And
because he went to SJR, so.
Yeah, Glass told me the other
London, day. I think.
Red River Community Center, I think he said, was where he skated outdoors. I don't know about Stone. And Kolesar is from, he's from Kildonan as well. So anyways, it just, you know, and then Kelly McCrimmon up behind us. Mm-hmm. And Shane Knighty from Neepawa.
Yeah,
but also everyone knows him in Winnipeg as well. He flew in yesterday. He did a clinic with a bunch of police officers last night on the ice in Tahoe, and he's in a shuttle right now going to Reno. They just opened a new rink in Reno, and he's doing a kids clinic there this morning. So there's Darren Millard, who's the host of our TV show. He's a Manitoban. I could go on and on. Von Karpen, head of our pro scouting, Mick McCrimmon, Mickey, Kelly's son, one of our pro scouts. Like it's, if someone needs a halubshi recipe, they can get it from the Golden Knights organization.
Gary Lawless is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live both on YouTube. And of course, remember to subscribe, smash that subscribe button. Don't miss a minute when we are live on YouTube. And of course, subscribe to the podcast, get it delivered to your device automatically each and every week. You know, Gary, here in Winnipeg, so much of the focus, of course, has only really been on the North Division. You forget that there's other teams, and it's almost been like a bit of an afterthought. And that's unfortunate, but of course, I think that's just a function of the COVID scheduling that we're facing. What's it like, you know, in Vegas? Is it a similar phenomenon where basically, you know, it's the Pacific Division or bust, and almost nothing else that's going on in the league is really resonating, I would say?
Well, I'm just trying to subscribe to the podcast. I don't, because I used to listen on, I would tune in on the app when you're on the radio station. So I want to make sure that, there you go. I just subscribed.
There you go.
Excellent. People are like, so the TV ratings in Vegas are through the roof, right? Like it's right now, I believe we're third in the United States behind only Pittsburgh and Buffalo. And our numbers are ahead of, they're beyond what they were last season. And they're our best numbers ever for regular season. So people are certainly paying attention to the Golden Knights. You know, Vegas is I would call Edmonton a hockey town. I would call Toronto a Toronto Maple Leafs town. Do you know what I'm saying? It's a little bit different. I believe Winnipeg is a hockey town. I think Vegas right now is a Golden Knights town. Will it become a hockey town? They're sure trying, you know, like my daughter has gone through learn to skate, learn to play Little Knights, and now she's in House League and skating with a Vegas Junior Golden Knights team as well. So she's like, she's gone through the whole development there. They built two pads in Summerlin where we practice and have our offices. They bought an American League franchise, built two pads in Henderson. They're building a main rink. Right now, the Silver Knights are playing at the Orleans. The Orleans, April Wine plays there every Canada Day. It's kind of a cool place. I love walking, driving by the marquee there because they have a lineup of all these Canadian acts.
That's where they have the Canada Cup curling tournament there.
You're correct. And so that now they're building in Henderson another facility for that. And I've already heard, like, my daughter skates four times a week. She skates twice in Summerlin and twice in Henderson. And now you already hear people talking about we need more ice. They just built this rink in Reno. So I think that, you know, I think it's really catching on here. So
if she's skating four times a week, is she going to represent Canada at the Winter Olympics or is she going to represent the United States at the Winter Olympics?
She's a Canadian and let's hope she's better than her old man or there'll be no chance of her skating to Canada. That's for sure. So, you know, it's catching on. I think, I think I'm an atypical viewer. You know, I come home at night and I have the center ice package and, you know, I'll be honest. I love watching Dennis Bayak do his thing. So if the Jets are on, I'm tuning into that. And I still, you know, I have a lot of friends in the Jets organization. I still pay attention to the team. It's still fascinating to me what they've been able to do and what they're going to do. And Toronto is kind of, you know, Toronto and Edmonton are when they play, it's kind of appointment television. It's much must watch. They don't really like to play defense up there in Canada, which is really kind of odd, right? Because you think of teams that represent Canada. How do they win at the Olympics and the World Cup? And they're better defensively than everybody else. They grind, they check. Hey, man, like there's no checking north of the border right now. It's something else. There are some real interesting issues about this. Like we know that there's a concentration of hockey media in Canada and how much attention are they paying to the rest of the league? Like, I'll tell you what, when they announce all the award winners at the end of the season, they better not all come from the North Division. And although right now Austin Matthews is taking them all home, so maybe that will be the case. But it's there are things to like about this, and hey, this is the situation we're in. I hate it. I'm not coming to Winnipeg twice this year. I'm not going to New York City, you know, on and on and on. I like going to every building in the league. I like seeing every team in person. I like talking to every coach in the league, all of those things. And now it's, I don't like the Coyotes jerseys enough to have to look at them eight times.
I agree with you on that one, Lawman. And Lake Tahoe and Vegas aren't bad, though. I gotta throw that in there in terms of not being able to travel to all the arenas. But, you know, sticking on the topic of the hardware, you know, I can't believe it's taken us this long to get around to Marc-Andre Fleury, because if he keeps playing like this, he's going to give Connor Hellebuyck a run for his money for the Vezina Trophy, and he's going to get the start for the Golden Knights this afternoon. And I believe it's Philip Grubauer getting the start for the Avalanche, but obviously we want to talk about Fleury. You know, we know the numbers, 7-2, I think it's a 935 save percentage, goals against
937 this morning.
And a
1.56 goal.
There you go. And just incredible, right? Because when you consider Leonard signed the contract with the Golden Knights and we thought there was a chance that Fleury might get traded. Just, you know, the question I had for you is just, is it something that really shouldn't surprise us about Fleury? I mean, he's got the Stanley Cups. He's been so good for Vegas. You go back to that 2018 run. I mean, he's basically single-handedly the reason why, you know, the Jets, you know, didn't get past the Golden Knights. Obviously, the rest of the team was pretty good.
Ezzy.
No, I'm joking. I mean, Fleury
was... Those are Arctic blue glasses. Your Arctic blue-colored glasses you're wearing this morning.
Gary, no, but I can mute him if you want. This is, I have the power. I can mute him if you need me to.
No, but in all seriousness, I mean... Is this just not what we should have expected from Fleury? Because he's a guy that's, I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Famer most likely. So, but just, can you talk about how incredible he has been for this Golden Knights team with Leonard, you know, currently injured?
Yeah, well, not most likely. Like, he's climbing the wins. He's going to finish like third or fourth in all-time wins. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to the Hall of Fame without question. And first ballot, first opportunity, he'll go in. I think a couple of things. I think last year it was not a great year for him statistically. His numbers were not as good as they had been. I think he was over, you know, because of the lack of balance the team had in net, really, since he arrived in Vegas, he was overused. And that was not a knock on anybody. It just was the reality. If the team was going to win, they needed to play Marc-Andre Fleury. And that, you know, that's not the way the NHL works anymore. Not with the travel, not with the, like, I talked to Brian Boucher about this yesterday in the lobby here. And he's like, are you kidding me? Like, every night there's a guy in that other lineup that drives you nuts, right? You know what I mean? It's Vancouver has Peterson. We know who Edmonton has. We know who Winnipeg has. Toronto has Matthews. It just on and on and on and on. There's no off nights. Every night there's a guy in that lineup that is like, and there's parity. Every game is close. The points are so important. The mental strain on a goalie playing 55 plus games, just doesn't. And then the travel and the wear and tear, it doesn't. And the fact that the best way to score in the NHL is to be right on top of the goalie and to be bumping them and shoving them and working them all night. Like, it just, Tuukka Rask said it before the bubble last year. You know, him and Halak had that great tandem going. And he just said, he goes, like, the future is, you know, 45, 35, something like that. And I, like, Fleury is fresh. Now, he's had this run now because Leonard is injured. And really, I think he's let in one goal that he probably doesn't like all year. It came in his last game. And that was, he'd been overworked. So now I expect him to be tremendous today. He's been off since Tuesday. He's going to be fresh again. They need to get Leonard back. And DeBoer is pretty committed to going with this rotation. And I think he should be. Like, to me, I'd run it as far as you can, even if you have, even into the playoffs. I think it makes sense to, if you have $12 million invested in goal, it has to be an advantage. You got to use that advantage. They've got two world-class goalies. Like, if you're picking Team Canada right now, Fleury has to be in the conversation. And Leonard is in the conversation for Sweden, without question. So you got two of the best goalies in the world. Use them. Let's not overthink this, guys. 29 tonight, 90 tomorrow, and let's go.
There's no question, Gary. It's a good problem to have when you have two goaltenders of that caliber. We'll let you go, but before we do, of course, we sort of have to, you know, pay tribute, for lack of better terminology, to where we've all got together for the first time. And it was over a decade ago at 1290. We were there, and then you and Huss came over, and the bond that we all created, I think, for a long time there. And obviously you've moved on to Vegas since then, and are doing tremendously well. But, you know, you go back and all those fun times, and, you know, our buddy Anthony Sanfilippo from Philadelphia is going to come up here in about 10 minutes or so. And the times where we would hang out with the Flyers beat writers in the draft in Philadelphia, and all those fun times that we all had together, I'd be remiss to not make mention of that. And it all does start with what happened at that radio station. And it's good to see you, old friend, and you're doing well, and we're so happy to see you.
Yeah, well, I don't want to say that I'm proud of you guys, because it's not my position. Like, we're colleagues, you know what I mean? I'll say it this way. I'm extremely proud to call you friends, to have been on your show a few times, to have been a part of what we built, what we were part of building over at that place. That the news that came out, hit me right between the eyes, and it was really, really, for me, I thought about Hustler, I worried about Hustler, what's he going to do, where's he going to go, and I'll be honest with you guys, I didn't worry about you guys for a second. I knew that that you would figure something out, and that you would, I knew you wouldn't miss a beat, and I know Hustler isn't going to either, right? he'll return in a bigger and better form without question. But it just for this program, I knew was going to be, you guys are innovators. You've created one of the coolest magazine shows in the hockey world, like without question. You guys get the texts from me. I listen all the time. It's a great program. I love you all. I'm glad to see your faces. Stay warm and hope to see you again soon.
We'll do it. We'll do it at the lake on the shores of Lake Winnipeg next time, Gary. Okay. Thanks so much.
And if I could just conclude this with the Legal Curve sandwich for life.
Ezra, you know what? You've got some Myers,
Oscar
Lawless, belly crumb.
Little honey mustard in here somewhere.
Don't pretend you don't cheat, Ezra. There's pictures of you sneaking in at Myers in a trench coat with a ball cap down low, saying, "I'll have the H&L, please."
No, it's true. I do go see Harrison at Myers every once in a while just to
They're
get
both
a little
great places. You know what? Exactly. I love Bernstein's. I love Myers. I love everything today. What happened
there
to Gary?
Go.
What happened to Gary? He's warm and fuzzy all of a sudden.
It's a jovial celebration. Gary, we'll let you get ready for the broadcast. Enjoy. Thanks for joining us this morning. There he goes. Gary Lawless is joining us here. We're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And I guess that leads me seamlessly into doing a quality read for our sponsor, Bernstein's Deli. Of course, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, Bernstein's is there, whatever format you need. If you want curbside, they got curbside. If you want delivery, they have delivery. However you need it, whatever you need, Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out. Check them out online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.